Welcome, everybody, to Season 2 of Hyphenated Life. Thank you for joining us, and thank you for following us on all the obvious channels, Facebook, Instagram. I don't think we're on Twitter yet. And at hyphenatedlife.org. You can also find us through pinestreetchurch.net. Hyphenated Life podcast can be found there as well. And we're so thankful to our church.
So we really are excited to be back. We have a lot of exciting guests lined up here for this second season. And the first of which is a really good, almost lifelong friend of yours, Andrew, right? Stephen Nix, who lives in Nashville.
That's right. Stephen Nix is on the show today. Stephen is a Grammy-nominated songwriter. He's a producer. He's a vocal coach. He's a director of music for a church in Nashville. And somebody who kind of adopted me as his little brother when I was in college. And so just feel really grateful and lucky and to have him on the program today and talking about his own personal journey and his own kind of musical philosophy, life philosophy. We kind of cover a lot of ground today with Stephen.
Yeah, I'm excited. I've heard a lot about him as he's been, you know, formational in your life as a friend, as a mentor, a colleague. And hearing his story, I find so much fascinatingly similar to my upbringing, my story as a musician. You know, we'll, I'm sure, be able to relate on that level. And he said he was like a surrogate older brother, and now he's like a surrogate uncle to your kids. That's how close you are. And it's so cool to get to have him on this podcast today to kick off season two of Hyphenated Life. I am so excited about this. Tell me a little bit about you guys met at Belmont. This is not the first guest we've had that has a connection to you and Belmont University, but that's a great school, a great music program, and he was floating around there and you floated in. And how did you guys connect?
So he'll talk about this on the episode today, but we actually met at a mega church in Nashville that was my church in college. He was the director of worship there and doing compositions for this church, and I was looking for someone to give me vocal lessons, because when I started at Belmont, I was a music major and then figured out I was going to fail freshman piano and transferred to the business department as soon as possible, and then found my way to religion. It's such a weird and eclectic journey. Yeah. But that's how we met, was through the megachurch in Nashville. And then Stephen and I started writing music together for that church. And so, yeah, that was a fun beginning to my college journey, but meeting Stephen, and we'll talk, we didn't quite get into this today, but Letters to a Young Poet, I swear to goodness, that was a formational, foundational book that Stephen introduced me to, Rainer Rilke, this beautiful German poet that's been a big part of my own personal spiritual journey. But reading that book, Letters to a Young Poet, completely changed my life and the way I saw God, the way I saw myself, the way I saw how I grew up and where I was going. So anybody out there who's not read Letters to a Young Poet, you got to read that book by Rainer Rilke, R-I-L-K-E. Anyway.
So I haven't read that, so I guess you're speaking to me as much as to any of our listeners who haven't read it.
I was hoping you'd pick up on that. Just kidding. Yeah, for sure. It's an awesome book.
Welcome to Hyphenated Life. We invite you to join us on this journey to explore the connection of the sacred and the secular that inspires us to become more fully alive.
Welcome to Season 2, Episode 1 of Hyphenated Life. Thank you for joining us, everybody. And today we have the great good fortune of launching Season 2 with Stephen Nix. Stephen Nix is a Grammy-nominated producer for Blues Songwriter and Recording of the Year. He is a pianist and musical director for multiple Christian, country, and blues artists. Stephen currently serves as director of music at Hillsboro Presbyterian Church in Nashville, Tennessee, where they celebrate the diversity of musical styles in worship. A little bit more about Stephen. Stephen's basic belief for making music is to have fun, to be inspired, and to be creative. He holds degrees in piano, voice, choral conducting, music pedagogy, I'm not sure, and arranging from the University of South Alabama and Louisiana State University, LSU. Go Tigers, I guess. He was born in Mobile, Alabama, on a farm not too far from the Gulf of Mexico. Well, Stephen has traveled the world as a pianist, as a music director for numerous professional artists in all sorts of genres. He was also creative director for Nashville and Hollywood-based music publishing companies, and currently spends a lot of time, well, at least a little bit of time, as a guest clinician and vocal coach. Stephen has written several hundred songs, which have been recorded and sung throughout the world. And what I love perhaps most about this fine young man from Nashville is that he loves, his passion is helping others become the best musicians and singers they can be through what he describes as the universal language of music to build faith and community. Stephen Nix, thank you for joining us on Hyphenated Life today. What a pleasure.
Thank you. Wow. Thank you so much.
You probably didn't know half of that stuff about yourself, did you?
I really didn't. You forget about
least,
stuff.
Yeah, at least forgotten about it. Well, I guess, I don't know. We can start with this. I mean, full disclosure, Stephen Nix is one of my best friends in life, and he is somebody I've admired since I was 19 years old, and it's so interesting since I just turned 33. Everyone knows that's not true. We've known each other for, God, 25 years or so by now, and he is somebody I admire and respect. And, you know, sometimes we get into our professional worlds and our personal stories, you know, not by intention per se, but get lost in the mix of what we're doing professionally. Because one of the things that most people ask about who we are is, well, what do you do, right? It's like, what do you do in life? But I think to start today, Stephen, I would love for our audience to hear a little bit about your own personal story and how you began in your own evolution theologically and personally and relationally. And so I'd love to start with that. And so you grew up on a farm in the Deep South. What was that like?
Well, I always say when you're in the Deep South and you grow up on a farm, it's chores and church. That's pretty much all it is, and school. And so basically that was your entire community, was going to church, doing your chores, and going to school. And that's the way you lived your life. It's quite simple.
So what was church like for you growing up?
Well, I was raised very strict, what they call Pentecostal holiness, which was the belief that, like, we couldn't have TVs, we couldn't wear shorts, women had to wear dresses, women couldn't cut their hair, men had to keep their hair short. So I was raised in a very strict religious background. But, you know, that's what it was. It was normal.
So you've talked a little bit about, some more full disclosure, Stephen was recently featured on Pride Forward, which is a storytelling project with the USA Today Network, and we can link to that on our Hyphenated Life page as well. But one of the things that stood out to me, too, is you talking about your own development in terms of coming to terms, you know, and a gradual dawning about your fullest self, your truest self, and who you were as a child growing up musically, and then who you wanted to be and how that came to be. And I know that there's some personal moments and milestones in your own growing up story. Maybe begin a little bit musically speaking, how music came to be part of your own soulful medicine or soul medicine, if you will.
Well, for one thing, my family are very well known in the music, in the gospel music world. And so music was pretty much the staple of our existence. My dad threatened me at four. If I didn't sing, I was going to be in trouble. So I was a shy kid and I immediately learned to sing. As a matter of fact, it was this week, the lady that taught me how to sing harmonies, she says she remembers me when I was like five, and that I just learned the harmonies very quickly and she never had to teach me again. So, but music was just, it was the only expression we had outside of church and school and farm life.
And you had, I mean, I would describe it as a lot of adultness in your childhood. Could you talk a little bit about what that looked like in your world growing up? A lot of adultness as a kid and a lot of responsibility that you accepted and adopted early on.
Well, I like to call myself the crazy accident of my family. I was the surprise kid, of parents who were substantially older than normal. My mother was like 45 when I was born, and my dad was in his 50s or his early 50s. So I was kind of a surprise kid. So when I came along, they had already had two other children, all of a sudden me. I had a lot of responsibilities, but at 15, my mother passed away suddenly. And my siblings had already left home, and I was left to sort of sustain the household. I literally took what income my mother left me through Social Security and paid the house notes and kept myself alive at 15, no help. Because my dad, he just suffered from extensive grief because of the loss, that he sort of could not function.
So you took up sort of, in some sense, a matriarchal and a patriarchal role in your own family growing up. And fast forwarding just a little bit, you also graduated high school awfully early and started your college journey awfully early, right? Could you talk a little bit about that as well?
It was the same year that my mother died at 15 that I graduated from high school. I was valedictorian in my class, and I'll never forget doing the speech and just barely getting through the speech for the tears, you know, losing your mother. And I received scholarships to University of South Alabama, and I immediately took them. It was a way out of the farm, at least something different, because I wanted to pursue something. Again, I was just searching for who I was going to be.
Right. And where, I mean, if you could think a little bit about, you know, you've described the Pentecostal holiness tradition. Were you also thinking about how am I different theologically at that point? Or are you kind of dealing with so many other things that you're just kind of managing life? But I'm kind of curious, like, how did that also jumpstart your own theological evolution through, you know, being raised in that kind of strict conservative tradition, and here you are with the world opening up to you?
I recall that just the sociological shock of being a part of a secular institution such as a university, state school, that alone was just overwhelming to me. And then to add to it the fact that I was the youngest person on the university campus that point, my peer group was basically, they were all older than me, much older than me, you know, 2 and 3 years older, which is a lot in that, you know, when you're 15.
Right. So how were you, you know, when you think about coming to your fullest self, the truest version of yourself, where were you in that process as well? Because what I loved about listening to your story with the Storytelling Project is how you were surrounded by so much conservatism theologically and really coming to terms with who Stephen really was through all of that, who your truest self, your deepest soul was. Could you talk a little bit about how all of that was unfolding as well through that process?
Sure. You know, the overarching reality to the story is, I think that God gently guides us, even when we're not aware that that is happening. I basically shoved anything that had to do with relational, sexual, anything. I just shoved it down. I just totally turned myself inward focused to my education and making good grades and keeping my scholarships. And I really didn't even give myself a choice, even during undergrad or grad school, to even think about that. And I think it was a form of escapism for myself to just survive. Now that I look back, that's what I was doing.
Right. And so that theme of adultness was kind of showing up. You were just doing what you had to do. So what would you say would be another kind of milestone moment of moving toward coming into your gifts, your journey to Nashville? If you could talk about a little bit of those pivot points, what would you point to?
Well, I think, unlike most people, I did have contacts here in Nashville, being that there were family here. So I wasn't going into a place that was, totally strange to me. I at least knew some people. But I had started teaching at LSU some and just realized that I was, number one, I was really young. And I did not want to be a part of, I wanted to be in a creative world, not in so much the educational world where you're stuck doing the same, courses every semester. I wanted something more creative. And so I made my way to Nashville, Tennessee, moved here. And the first night I was here, I walked into a big mega church and I was hired. First night. But it was only because my family knew all the people and knew me. So I know that sounds weird, but that's really true.
I bet it was. And that mega church, by the way, is where you and I met. I was grinning, coming to Belmont University in Nashville, looking for voice lessons, and that's sort of how we met as well. When I started writing songs, and before I started writing sermons, there was a few years in between there. And Stephen was a big part of that journey for me.
Yeah, Stephen, thank you again for being with us today. This is exciting. I've heard a lot about you, and one thing I definitely notice, and I hear some similarities for you, is one can get in that boat of regimen and structure and formality, such as comes with academia or professional environment, such as working for a church as a paid church musician. And while you can certainly have your own spirituality, your own spiritual path, in many ways, it's really easy to muffle that, to put dampeners on it so that it kind of keeps within those rigid structures. And at Hyphenated Life, that's one of the things we created this podcast, was to explore how can those things be, those dualities be eliminated, or how can those structures and spiritual passions be combined and become symbiotic. And I wonder if there's any experience you've had as you moved along in your career and in your life where you found some of those seemingly opposed elements starting to work together. If you have any experiences like that, you'd want to share.
I guess, working in church work, you learn to become a conduit for the talent of others, and you learn to focus on other people. It becomes if you're doing it correctly, you're going to become a lot selfless, not selfish. And so it's very easy in the pattern of trying to help others find their musical selves, find their musical excellence, encouraging them, focusing them, directing them, teaching them, it's easy to kind of forget about yourself. In which, for me, I think now that I look back on it, it was a way of coping with me not having to deal with, who I really was. But if I could focus on other people and other people's talent, then I didn't have to focus in on me.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I think, You said at one point you had a bit of an aversion towards possibly teaching collegiately at LSU or teaching, but we find ourselves in that role a lot anyways. And that is one of the things about the markers of the importance of self-care, right? If you are caring for others, but you're not well yourself because you've neglected yourself, then there's an imbalance there and you're not able to help them to your fullest extent, and therefore they don't get the best version of you. You're not experiencing the best version of yourself or oneself. This is not you or me necessarily, but I think a relatable experience. So I know for me, one thing that I found is giving myself the opportunity to have focus inwardly on what it is that I'm doing for myself. If I'm able to do that, I find that I am able to help others in a better way. And I think of, and you as someone who studied voice and choral conducting in academia, there's a lot of focus on some technical things. You know, if you've taught voice versus coaching voice, these are sort of two different concepts. And one thing I think that makes voice and singing unique is that the instrument is internal. And we can do all the things in the world to analyze a vocal spectrum of the sound wave of what happens when you raise your soft palate or lower your jaw or, you know, have your tongue forward or up in the back and all of the different things and how to manipulate sound. And okay, now go do that. It's not like pressing a key on the piano or a key on a brass instrument or a finger on a fretboard. It's, you have to switch gears into what is actually, from my perspective, it is like a spiritual outlook. You have to give a metaphor, you know, like do like you're inhaling, you're smelling the fragrance of a rose for the first time. That's how you get the insides of your body to do things that isn't pressing a button, you know. That's one of the things I love about singing with others, about helping others to sing, whether it's in a voice lesson or a coaching, which is my preference a little more as well. But can you tell me about how some of that is really helped or impacted you in a spiritual kind of way?
Well, the minutia of being, my master's degree in pedagogy, it was focused on the science of how things worked, at which it took you into this critical thinking of how does my finger connect to the note? How does my voice connect to the vowel sound? Everything was science. It wasn't some sort of extemporaneous sort of like accident, but there were techniques and capabilities of doing that. And when you start developing that thought process, you immediately can turn yourself to your spiritual world and you want to understand what this means and what it means to you and where you are in that and what works and what doesn't work and the connections of that. I really think that music was a great tool because I had no mentor. I had no one to guide me, except I'm still an avid, and I don't say this to be spiritual, but I believe in prayer, and I didn't have parents to lean on. So, I would just pray and go, God, I don't know. I just don't know. And there was not one moment where God didn't sort of intervene in some way. You know, it may not have been the ultimate answer, but it was a gentle nudge in a direction I needed to be. If that makes sense. And I will never forget, and here's the epiphany that really just blew me away. When I came to Nashville, I was playing a lot for people, their music director, and I was sort of playing the role of keeping everybody corralled and on the same page, and started realizing that I would go in the studios and they would be singing these songs and they weren't really that good. And I'm like, I can write something better.
Yeah.
And so I started writing songs. And again, I took my pedagogy and I started analyzing what's a good song from another song. Like, for instance, I got a request last year for Billboard magazine to do an overcompensating of you know, the pop country world and why it affects people, you know. And so you start doing that. Well, I started writing songs, and these songs were being cut. These songs were being recorded. I mean, I had no intention of that. And I remember I guess the most moving time was I sat in a congregation of a mega church. There were probably 3,500 to 4,000 people there. And they had multiple services with that number. So you can imagine how many people were in attendance in one service. And they just kept doing the same service. So they were using the same music. But they sang two of my songs congregationally back to back. I sat in the congregation, and I never felt so alone in my life. I felt this sense of, here everyone knows everything. I've shared this, but they really don't know who I am. I've shared my talent, but I haven't shared me.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's where, from my friendship with you, Stephen, well, it started out as I was your vocal student for a while, and it's somewhat miraculous to me how our friendship has grown over the years. But one of the things that I would hold up that I've watched you and seen you do over and over in your life is this fine integration about your musical prowess, I'll be ironic and say humble panache you have had about your own artistry, but there was always this kind of binary thing going on, right? This splitting that went on that you had to do for a long time between what you did in the church because you couldn't be fully who you were, and then finding that integration point. And I've heard you talk about this story where you left that mega church on that Sunday or whenever it was, they were playing your songs and you felt, like you just said, you felt so alone. And something happened though when you left that service on your way home. Could you say what that was?
Well, it's really, and this is where Mystical Stephen jumps up, and I do apologize, but you know, it's been my salvation.
Bring it on.
Yeah, we like mysticism.
Well, I got in my car, and again, I go to praying, and I'm crying. Just tears. I could barely see. And I was crying, and I just ran out of the church in the middle of the service, and I got in my car and said, God, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. I love you, but I feel so alone. I need somewhere. I need a home. I need a community. I need to feel like I am Stephen, the person, not just Stephen, the musician or the director or the piano player, whatever. And I got in my car and was driving home. And literally, I looked up and there was a sign in Belmead. You know where Belmead is, don't you?
Yeah.
Anyway, there was a sign in Belmead of this church, and the church service started later than normal church services. It was like, I think, 11:30 or something. So I said, I mean, I'd never been to it, didn't know anything about the church, but I said, I'm going to try this. I'm going to just go to another church just to see what happened. I walk into the church. It's a UCC church. I walk in and sit in the back, and all of a sudden I realize I'm in the middle of a lot of lesbian, gays, transgenders. I am sitting right there, but I had no idea that that's what that was. Right. Again, I feel like that was God's way of kind of quietly pushing me to a place. And when I entered, you know, they were singing. So I was singing. They turned around because it was a small place. And so you could hear me. They were like, you can sing. And I said, yeah. And so anyway, it started out. I met friends that day. I mean, I met great friends that I still have to this day.
Yeah.
And it was just a wild connection. All of a sudden, I felt like I was a part of community. And I had suffered from depression, deep depression, because I was for many years. And that, I mean, my depression just left. It was like an instantaneous, it's gone.
It's like everything you had pushed down or suppressed, there was a release somehow with that, as you say, mystical moment, that serendipity that made you stopping at that church that day on your way back from loneliness to integration and community.
Well, what was weird about that is that church, they ended up begging me to start a little choir. And I was a little bit hesitant because I was still traveling, but I'm like, this will be fun. It will be fun for everyone. And I tend to like very soulful gospel music because I think it connects with people in a passionate way that's cathartic. And being LGBTQ, there's a lot of suppression and a lot of hiding that goes on. And to be able to just let it all out, you know, in song and in music. And I started this choir, and this fledgling choir grew to be a formidable gay and lesbian choir in the Southeast, gospel choir. Well, we went everywhere. But it was that day of me being obedient to my own feelings of loneliness and just following a path because I knew that I needed something more.
Your powers of intuition that led you to that, right? I mean, you didn't, like you said, you didn't have a mentor. You didn't have a guide per se telling you, whispering over your shoulder, here's where you go and what you do, or leading you down that road. It was a journey of discovery pretty much that you made by yourself.
Right. Right. And I think the reality of that was, I met people of genuine who had been on the same journey I was on. And it was a place of solace. It was safety. I didn't feel like I was like the guy with the horn sticking out of his head. I felt like I was a normal human being. Whereas I used to feel like, oh, I'm a little bit different than these people. And it wasn't that I was better. I just had a different perspective.
Right. Well, you've always been a sort of unicorn, Stephen, right? I mean, don't sell yourself short.
Yep. You can only be one thing, and that's original.
That's right. Which you are. Well, you recently, and we'll head toward the finish here, but there are two or three quick things I just want to say or ask. And the first thing I would observe is that you recently, and you rarely do this because I know you're very humble, you're a humble unicorn, and you don't want to talk about yourself, you don't want to listen to yourself, but what I loved about what you've done recently, I think it was on your personal Facebook page, but you extended a personal challenge to people to find their creative spirit. Could you talk a little bit about that, number one, and then number two, for anybody listening to Hyphenated Life with this episode, if they are, you know, struggling with who they are, coming to grips with what's my truest self, what advice might you give to someone who's feeling some of the fear or confusion that you yourself felt along your journey to kind of coming to a place of that openness and integration, that integration point that you've talked about today. So could you respond kind of briefly to those two things?
Well, regarding the creative nature and the creative souls that we have, we're all creative human beings. No matter how boring you may think you are, there is something you're creative with. That might be cooking. It might be sewing. It might be writing a letter. But you are creative. And I think sometimes we think that to be our best creative selves and to find ourselves, we have to be the best at it. And that's not true. You know, the thing that I tell people all the time, and I challenge them, and I will perpetually challenge them until the day I die, is don't procrastinate with your creativity because you don't think you can do it. You don't think you're capable of doing it. Just do it. And be honest with yourself and make moments for yourself. Take time. Make an appointment with yourself, whether it's weekly, daily, or even monthly. You know, start small and you get bigger. You know, pick up the paintbrush. Sit down at that instrument or play that instrument. Sing that song. Write that song. Write that poem. Write that book. Do whatever you have to do. You know, create whatever you have to. Because I think it's a necessary journey in our spirituality to live authentically. And when a person is living within their true, authentic, creative self, there is a fulfillment that money, prestige, and nothing can buy. And that's something I know to be true.
For anybody listening today who is struggling with who they are or trying to find their tribe that you obviously found through a long journey, what advice would you have for them today, those folks out there listening who are struggling with their own sexuality or who they are and trying to find their place? What would you say to them today?
Being honest with what you need is not being selfish, and it's not wrong. And, you know, for some people, it's a series of, they just have to seek and seek and seek. But, you know, there's scripture, seek and you will find. And I tell people all the time, just experience things. Go to places where you know people are like you and you can find some sort of community, because we all desire community. And that's innate in all of us, regardless of us being introverts or extroverts. We all desire community. So just be honest with yourself and go, I need this for me. You're not being selfish, but you're taking a step toward your own fullness.
And you found that in the church. You started off at one point on the compass and have landed in another. And one of the really interesting things is, again, we're heading to a close, but one thing that I loved recently, you know, Raphael Warnock, who is only the, you know, recently elected to the Senate from the great state of Georgia, and only the 11th African-American senator, I believe, who's ever served in this country. He was asked how his background as a pastor informed his approach to uniting people in the divided time in which we live in our country. And he said, listen, if you've ever had to get folks who like anthems and folks who like contemporary gospel music to work together, you can do anything. And Stephen, I think you said something like, I should run for Senate too, right?
I sent you a text that said, I'm running for Senate.
That's right. So as we kind of come to a finish, we're talking about this sort of secular, sacred, you know, what David and I have talked about a lot here at Hyphenated Life is a false binary, a false dichotomy, and thinking about how you have found that community within that structure, that container within the church. What is the power of churches today in their role in engendering unity and creativity and blasting these binaries, blasting these dualities about sacred and secular? What would you say to the church today?
Well, I would say this, and I say this a lot of times when I get to be sort of like at a convention or speak in regard to these issues in the church that are not modern issues. They've been through decades. You know, it's just becoming more apparent, and we're able to communicate more quickly regarding them. But I think organically being aware of your congregants is a necessary thing. I see so many leaders that go in and they push their love, their musical taste onto these other people, when in fact they're consuming something totally different, whether that's a secular tune, whether it's a hymn from Martin, from Luther, whatever. But knowing your congregants and giving them a chance or giving them a place where the music, and for me, you know, my creativity is music, giving them a place where that's something that inspires them. But you have to be very diverse at that, very aware of the people you're around. Not every congregant's going to like the same thing.
I hear through your story a lot of sort of noticing of you know, roles and characters that defined who you were, whether it's teacher, whether it's composer, whether it's performer, whether it's caretaker. And I hear the transition, you know, it wasn't overnight, that move from Nashville back down towards your home, you know, maybe that was point A and point B, but it was a lifetime to get all the way through that. But it seems like there was almost an epiphanal moment. And I wonder how those roles changed for you and how you identified with them from that move from Nashville, where as a composer, you looked up and heard 6,000 people happily singing your song and never felt more alone, to, you know, roughly 24 hours later, not that they were singing your song, but you never felt more engaged and together. And moving from there, how did those roles that you still embrace and live in today, how did they change? And are they more a part of you now?
Well, you know, I think, you know, with living, now that I'm over 21,
barely.
Yeah. Now that with living, I think you start when you first encounter like the role of a composer, the role of a, all of them are separate entities within themselves, but they're uniquely worked together. And they all sort of form who you are. You know, I'm a part piano guy, I'm a part writer, I'm a part vocal coach, I'm a part, you know, clinician. I'm a little bit like a producer. I'm a little bit of everything. And I think all those roles have helped guide me into being sensitive and being intuitive to other people and their needs, because I've had to put myself in their shoes, in their creative spaces.
Beautiful. I feel like we found yet another, Andrew, we found another simpatico compatriot here with us in our journey. So many of the things that you've said today resonate powerfully with me, and I know with Andrew. And if you go back and listen to all of our episodes, you'll hear a lot of the same things. Stephen, it's been an absolute honor and pleasure to have you with us today.
I'm so grateful and celebratory of your journey, and feel really lucky that you've shared part of your story here in this format today. But Stephen, you're a friend and a mentor and a confidant, and your Uncle Stephen to my own kids. And they love you, and we love you. And I know that everyone listening today can connect with your story. And I'm so glad that you've come on Hyphenated Life to share it. Deep gratitude, man.
Well, thanks, Andrew and David. Thank you so much for the opportunity. And if I could say something to anyone, I dare you to pursue your creative dreams. Dance, make music, do the art, write those books, because it will change your life.
Thank you, Stephen Nix.
Hyphenated Life is a production of Pine Street Church in Boulder, Colorado, hosted by Andrew Daugherty and David Lomdieu.
The podcast is produced by Phil Norman and executive producer Alexi Moldem. Special thanks to our guest today and the Leo Hill Trust of Boulder, Colorado.